Welcome to Between a Talk and a Hard Place, a podcast for women bringing down-to-earth conversations about the realities of our real-life experiences. I'm your host, Lisette McKenzie, author, life and mindset transformation coach, and self-concept connoisseur. And together with my girls, Alicia and Natira, we'll be discussing everything from situations to situationships and the challenges women face every day as we navigate this thing called life.
Okay. We're actually recording season 2, episode 1, which is a yay for us.
Yay!
It is a learning experience, and I'm having so much fun having all these conversations with you guys. And we're back at it, but today we have so much to unpack because the world is in a disarray. Some people are losing their minds. Some people minds, they've been lost their minds, and we're just trying to navigate through all of the anger, all of the hurt. And that is what we are going to talk about. We're going to just voice our frustrations today on this episode. Unfortunately, this is not the note I wanted to bring the show back into, but this is what it is. And it definitely deserves some discussion.
Well, I'm gonna kick it off.
kick it, girl.
Because, you know, not only are we in the middle of a global pandemic, I don't know if I told y'all this because I can't remember the last, my stepfather had COVID-19.
You did?
And all of the, thank God he's being discharged this week.
Awesome.
So all of the problems that we had with the hospital and the level of care that he was receiving was, you know, what could throw you down. You know, I don't know if I told y'all about that, that the hospice called my mother and said, you know, hospice is calling to make arrangements. My mother was like, what are you talking about? What has changed since yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody from the hospital has called me personally to say anything. And she was like, well, I apologize. The hospital is discharging him to hospice because he's refusing treatment.
Hospice?
We called the hospital, like, what is going on? Because we don't, you know, what's going on? So the doctor says, well, I've been his doctor for the last 24 hours. He is aware of, he is making the decision that he wants to be discharged and go into hospice because he is more concerned with eating than treatment. And I said, well, first of all, how do you know he's coherent enough to make those decisions because he's ill? And second of all, he's never said any of this to us. Mm-hmm. And so how do I know what you're saying to him and whether or not he understands what it is that you're saying? Because we're talking about a very sick person. She says, well, we go in there, we understand people's cognitive abilities and, you know, he is refusing treatment. I said, well, can we have this conversation with him, the family, and ourselves? Because that doesn't sound like the man we know who would say, you know, just throw me away. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked her, I said, well, when is the last time that he ate? When is the last time that you guys fed him? And from the time of that conversation, it had been 5 days since they had fed him.
So was he on an NPO, a nothing by mouth? Is that?
She said that we are concerned about, because he's on so much oxygen, that they didn't want to give him anything to eat. And I said, well, I'm not asking you to bring a hamburger and french fries here.
Give the man something.
Give the man some insurance. So when she went in the room, I said, can we have this conversation with him in the room? He said, bring me insurance.
So he's asking for this.
I'm hung. And he said, and that's BS. You come in here to draw blood, and it's not my fault that you can't find a vein. So if you don't feed me for 5 days or bring me anything to drink, I'm dehydrated and I'm battling COVID. How are you going to find the vein? So they mad because they can't do their job, so they won't bring him anything to eat.
Wow.
And so I was furious. I was like, can you just go get him one right now? You know, I felt like Shirley MacLaine in that movie, Terms of Endearment, where she was screaming at the people, bring my daughter the shot. Give me a shot. I'm like, bring him some fucking Ensure now. Right.
If, oh my Lord.
He's hung. I mean, just think of how you feel when you hung. And how much of an attitude you get when you don't have, and you well. Mm-hmm. Imagine being sick, someone coming and poke and prod on you, and they can't do their job. Wow. And then you ask them, while you're in here, can you bring me an Ensure? And they tell you no.
Wow.
How many times has he asked you for something to eat? Lots of times. And you refuse to do it because you say there is a risk of him choking. Well, you ready to discharge him to hospice. So just
exactly.
Give him the Ensure.
If he gonna choke, give him an Ensure and see what happens. Wow.
So that was just, you know, I was already, you know, battling that. And then, you know, this whole thing with George Floyd, and then, you know, Fort Worth put in a curfew, and my husband, 7 o'clock p.m. curfew, and my husband has to be to work at 10 p.m. So now he has to go out the house on a curfew to go to work, and I have to worry about that too.
So wait a minute. So they wouldn't allow, even if he has like a letter?
They can, but you're still taking a risk.
A risk, yeah.
What are you doing out here in the curve? You know what I'm saying? You're putting an unnecessary burden back on the victim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they have to go to work. Fortunately, thank you, Jesus, that there wasn't any incidents then.
Right.
And we were fine. But I just keep thinking about George. I just keep thinking about this man losing his life over an alleged fake $20 bill. Is that what we're worth in 2020?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I personally have not watched the video. I can't.
I can't either.
I didn't watch the entire video. If I saw 5 seconds of it, that was a lot. I couldn't take it. Just from a couple of seconds, I could not take it. And that was heartbreaking in and of itself. That took me back to listening to the tape of Trayvon Martin.
Oh God.
And I can remember I was sitting at my desk at work in tears, because you can hear this boy screaming for help. This boy who did nothing wrong, screaming for help.
You know what video took me, this thing almost took me out? The video of Philando Castile.
That too. Oh,
he was murdered in front of his child.
Mm-hmm.
And his girlfriend. And I never forget, like you said, you remember the moments where you were. I was in Cancun, honey, on vacation at this beautiful resort. Me and my husband having a great vacation. And that video almost ruined my entire vacation. I had a physical, visceral, I screamed, I cried. I was almost in hysterics, because the thing that is so bothersome, and this is the thing that my husband says, I was in the military, so they train you to kill people. You know what force is necessary to restrain a person, to murder them, and to cause bodily harm.
Uh-huh.
You shot this man 5 times. Was that even necessary?
No.
I think of the man in New York, 40 times. How many bullets do it take? when you are trained.
Absolutely.
You are a trained with that lethal weapon. Why does it, it goes to the level of hatred now.
Uh-huh.
That you feel towards this individual, that you will continue to shoot them after they're dead.
Specific, and you, not only that, you're specifically shooting them to kill. Because if I'm not mistaken, I would think that, yes, police officers are trained. They should be trained to disable.
Right.
Disable first. I want to say that's what the tasers are for. The tasers are used to disable first.
But why should I use that when I've been authorized to use deadly force and no one's going to hold me accountable?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing that it really pisses me off, because people will see how outraged other people get when police officers kill Black men and women, and at this point, children. And then they'll right away, they'll say, oh, but what about Black on Black crime? That shit pisses me off.
It's a myth, because the thing with Black on Black crime is it was created to divert from issues like we're talking about with the police system. But also, I was listening to T.I.'s podcast the other week, and he was saying, think about it. Most crimes, especially murders, are committed by people who know each other. Mm-hmm. So it's not a complete stretch that a Black person kills another Black person, but it's not because they're both Black. It's because they have a relationship. If we really wanted to be fair about it, we would talk about all the instances of white men killing their wives.
Exactly.
Or white men killing classmates.
Mm-hmm.
We don't call that white on white.
It's not called white on white crime. You don't hear that.
Right, so that it makes me mad as well, and that's, I feel like that's another issue of systemic racism.
Mm-hmm.
That's distracted away from the actual issue.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think in those terms.
No,
I tell people all the time. I said, I want to give you a prime example to bring this to your attention, right? Because to me, it's about attention to the issue. When you watch Investigation IDTV, which is a channel dedicated to deviant behavior, okay?
Right.
When it's white on white crime, it's my strange neighbor next door and my stalker from, you know, outside, and all of these killer twins and all of these sensationalized headlines when it's white people. But when Black people commit a crime, it's the first 48.
Mm-hmm.
At 8 p.m., Natera was killed on the corner of 8th and Main. He had 48 hours to solve this crime. The clock is ticking. Or cops.
Oh, you know, my God, cops. I hate cops.
So there's no backstory. They don't tell you the backstory. Oh, I thought he was a very wonderful person.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, I was very shocked in there. I, you know, interviewing the neighbors and the coworkers. That's none of that.
Uh-huh.
And because of the increased incarceration of our people, it would appear that we commit them at a higher rate.
Uh-huh.
When the actuality is, you are let free. They are let free on most cases. I call it, I don't know, it's a poor people tax.
Yes.
You know, you got to pay bond. And I set it so high that you can't pay it. So you're in here before you even get a trial.
Absolutely.
By your peers.
Absolutely.
And so it just appears that way, that it appears that it's more. It appears that way. Because that's the way that they have set it up.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter. Just like watching all these videos, watching the news, and this is how crazy it is, because watching the news and they talk about the protesters. Number one, I'm so tired of hearing protesters, rioters, looters equaling the same thing. Protesters are not rioters.
No.
Protesters are not looting. Protesters are protesting.
Right.
So I'm slowly watching how they're making this shift because it was like, oh, people are looting. Oh, people are rioting. Now it's protesters are looting. Protesters are rioting. No. Then when you watch the videos, and this is how blatant it is, this is how blind racism is. You clearly see front and center white people breaking windows, white people throwing bottles. There's videos with white people passing out bricks. Nobody sees that. All they see are the black people in the crowd who are going to rob, who are going to steal, who are going to do all these horrible things. Now, granted, there are these black people, these knuckleheads who are in the crowd doing these things. I'm not saying they're not, but right. I'm so tired of the white people who are physically present being ignored. It's okay if they're there.
It's invisible. Even beyond that, because your outrage, let's just take your outrage around the rioters and the looters, right? You're outraged by this behavior. Where's your outrage for this cop killing this man?
Exactly.
I want to see your outrage around that.
Then
we can talk about looting and whatever. We can talk about that later. Right now,
there's no outrage on that. They need to wait. They want to wait for more evidence. They always got to wait for more evidence when a black person is killed. There's always something.
If they hadn't been doing what they were doing,
now let me tell you how social media just has me so pissed off. I can't fault anybody for their views. I can only agree to disagree. So there are people who are like, oh, well, he was a criminal. He's been arrested. He was on drugs. He was this. So what? When these white students go to school and shoot up every person in the building, they have depression. They have this.
He's a lone wolf.
And all of these things are
nobody
okay.
would befriend him.
Right. They, you know, everybody comes to the defense of this poor white kid who was misunderstood and mistreated and bullied. So he had to go kill all of these other students. But when it's a black person who has a substance abuse issue, what about black people who get bullied? What about black people? They have substance abuse issues. What about black people who can't find a good job to support their families? We get stressed too.
Yes.
So why is it that you have to dig into our history to find reasons to say, oh, well, he deserved to be killed. Oh, he deserved what he got. Oh, he's not a good person. I'm so tired of hearing that same story. That song is so played out. And the majority of white people, there are some black people who I really don't understand. I don't understand how they fall into the category of white vision, because that's what I'm going to call it, white vision.
Right.
I don't understand how they can't see a struggle. Granted, some people don't go through that struggle. But if you don't go through that struggle, that doesn't mean that somebody else isn't.
Exactly.
Well, here's the thing. This is the problem. Because they have not, we have a history that is not shared.
Mm-hmm.
We have black history, and then we have history that's just history.
Right.
And it's not a shared experience. For instance, I'm going to tell you on social media, I had this on one of my friends' page. She said, this white lady said, I feel so cheated. I spent my whole life not getting the benefits of white privilege. I wasted my life working for a living. And so my response back to them was, I could have went further, but I want you to get the point. So I have to go basic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, this has nothing to do with work. Privilege is being able to go in a store and not be followed.
Mm-hmm.
Privilege is being able to sit in a restaurant and be properly served. That's privilege. When you go to buy a home and not be questioned about your finances before you even look at it, that's
mm-hmm.
privilege.
Right.
To be able to walk around your neighborhood without suspicion is privileged.
Yes.
Being able to use your credit card without being asked for ID
or cash a check,
that's privilege. To be able to protest and be called nice people, Mm-hmm. While Black people are called thugs.
Thugs. Mm-hmm.
That's privilege. To be able to travel about the country and not worry about where you have to stop and where you're going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
That's privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been working hard, too, for everything we have. Nothing
Absolutely.
Has been given to us.
Absolutely.
But when are you going to get tired of murder at the hands of citizens? I use that word on purpose. Of your fellow citizens being murdered at the hands of police and racist people. When are you going to get tired of that? When are you going to stand up? Use your privilege that you have to voice that you have had enough of this behavior.
Absolutely.
Because they think privilege means wealth. That is not what we're talking about. That is not what that means. But because they don't, that has never happened to them. They are shocked and appalled. Are you telling me that in 2020 that this is still going on? They think that's some old timey stuff that happened in their grandmama's day.
They cannot even
believe that this is still happening in 2020. And the reason why they can't believe it is because we are not having the conversation. We have become such a politically correct nation and so afraid of saying the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't have the conversation necessary to have a shared understanding. For instance, my job is having these calls and we're talking about these things. And the person said, I have not reached out to my Black colleague because I'm afraid of saying the wrong thing.
Uh-huh.
And I want to explore that fear. What are you afraid of? Because that is the problem, fear. What is it about my Black husband that you fear so much? What is
uh-huh.
it? Yep. I want to know. I want you to tell me what it is. What have you been taught and told so that I can debunk those myths that you have been instilled in you?
Yep.
Because why are you afraid to say, hey, listen, how are you doing?
Yes.
Yep.
What are you afraid of? And I know that fear is a real emotion.
Right.
And so for me, I want to understand what that is so I can break that barrier down totally and completely and destroy it altogether.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And this week I've been having conversations with my white friends, and they are, for the most part, are the ones who brought it to the forefront. So we use this social media app called Marco Polo, where you can leave like videos describing what you're doing at different points in the day. So usually, you know, first thing in the morning, one of us will say something and then the others respond throughout the day. Anyway, we've just been talking because they want to understand and they want to help. And honestly, I think it's one of the best things that's happened. Initially, I was worried because, like you said, I think a lot of white people have fear of Blackness. But I realized the more I speak about my experiences, and not just that, talk about my life in general, it kind of breaks those barriers. And it's been very healing. But for me, outside of my friend group, I cannot really post on social media. And it's because I think a lot of it, to me, either some people come across as too performative
mm-hmm.
in trying to join the movement, or some people just want to have something to rant about. So I find for me having actual conversations with people who are willing to listen and willing to ask questions, that's helped. Obviously, it's not possible with every person I know,
right.
Nor do I want to explain to every person I know what I'm feeling. And I don't believe everyone has a right to your feelings. I believe that's a privilege that you extend to people based on your relationship, but I feel like that is one of the things that has helped me through this because I can process things and go beyond like surface level discussions, like, you know, y'all are mentioning on social media, and actually get to the real nitty gritty. Because I find with social media, you post something, someone will start arguing, and then next thing you know, you have to block someone. I don't like all that.
Right.
But I feel like, you know, to the Tara's point, the more we actually just sit down and just let it out, the better it feels.
Well, the one thing I can say, and I agree, but I think I'm at the point where I'm tired of having to explain things that should come with common sense, should come with common decency.
Yeah.
Why do you have to look at another person? Now, white people, you know, everybody's the first to say, oh, I'm not racist. I'm not like them. I'm different. So then why is every black person a thug? Why is every black person a thief? You know, right. I'm tired of explaining, and I see on my social media page when I post things, I have some of my white Facebook friends, and they'll come on my page and they'll comment about how atrocious it is and that's horrible. And of course, when they comment on my post, I go to their page to see exactly how atrocious and horrible it is. Because if you're not posting on your page, stay the fuck off my shit. Don't come on my fucking page to talk about how nasty it is, but you're not on your page educating your people that look like you, about how nasty it is. Please stay the fuck off my shit.
And if they think that we're not noticing that.
Exactly.
And that's what we talked about at work.
Mm-hmm.
If your boss has not reached out to you or your coworker, we notice that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Your silence is complete. You don't have to be eloquent in your response. It could be just, you know, in the terror, I don't know what to say.
Exactly. That's at least
an apology. And I'm uncomfortable and I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had those conversations with a few of my friends. So she's like, I have in the terror. I don't know what to say. And I'm ashamed and I'm embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. That's something.
And she said, what can I do besides raise my children to be better? And she said, it's 20 years too late. And I said, well, we can't go back to yesterday. We can only start today.
Absolutely.
And we got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'm just, you acknowledging that is important. It's a very important thing. And we shouldn't be dismissive of it because they didn't get it before. Because like you said, Lizette, some things are common sense, but we all know that sense ain't common.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
It just drives me insane. Like, how can you look, regardless of what color somebody's skin is, how can you look at them and think they're not worthy of the same human rights that you are?
If you believe that black people are evil people who are thieves and criminals.
Right.
In your mind, like, if I think of a murderer, well, they get what they get.
Yeah.
A pedophile? Oh, string that. I don't care what you do to him.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is your attitude toward a whole race of people because you have been taught subliminally and intentionally that people of color are uneducated, their ghetto, they destroy their own neighborhoods because that's what the media says, right? Yeah. We destroy them. They're on drugs. They have a whole bunch of these babies. They all of these things that perpetuate the stereotype
of
black people. If that is all that they show, then that is your opinion. I had a friend who came from Africa and he said, I didn't know African Americans was like this in my country. They only show us your drug addicts, your this, your that. I thought these people were bad people.
Mm-hmm. So if you are
taught that these people are bad people, you get what you get because you're doing something wrong.
That and what you said is so important because I see posts of people who are not from America. You know, they migrate here for a better life. And they, Africans, Caribbeans, they have this perception of us before they even know us that we, just like white people, we're lazy. It's just so many stereotypes about American black people.
So well, even if you look at the television today, what shows are there on that mm-hmm. have positive Black images mm-hmm. on the TV?
Mm-hmm. You have to really search.
You have to search.
Usually it's created and curated by a Black talent staff.
Yep. Besides and Love and Hip Hop and the Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Right.
Yep, absolutely.
So if that's all that you see, you think, well, gosh, those people are just horrible.
Right.
Horrible people. You would right. think that because there is no other counter action to those things.
Yes.
There's not many in the C-suite, in the uh-huh. CEO suite. Uh-huh. There's not many in the upper corporation.
Uh-huh.
There's not many, you know, I talked to my girlfriend, one of my friends, white colleagues, I said, your house, I said, I'm just going to take a guess. I said, your house is at least worth $400,000. It's a beautiful home.
Uh-huh.
I said, but you are able to afford that home because you're able to elevate your position.
Right.
Your position. Uh-huh. They segregate us still. Because if I don't make $120,000 a year, I can't afford that house.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She said, I think I only have one Black person that live in my neighborhood. Why do you think that is? They don't even stop to ponder
mm-hmm.
why that is.
Yep.
Because we don't have a shared history. So they think, well, you know, if I pull myself up by my bootstraps, you know, because that's what they've been taught. Mm-hmm. And they can.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have a blocker here who says, nope, she ain't worthy. I'm not giving her that $120,000 salary.
Mm-hmm.
Not over my niece, nephew, cousin.
Absolutely.
Brother, sorority, sister.
Absolutely.
I'm not giving that to her.
Puppy's cousin, yep. Puppy's cousin. Even puppies and cousins get it.
Yeah, I'm not giving that to
her. Yep.
That's how they keep us out of those neighborhoods.
Uh-huh.
And you are still, again, segregated. Your kid goes to a segregated school because there ain't no Black kids in it.
Uh-huh. Right.
And so they don't get to hear those experiences. And so they think their experience is the same as everyone else. And it's funny that you said that because when I grew up in the Bronx, I really believed as a kid that this was like, everywhere was like this.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere had Cambodians and Indians and people from Vietnamese and Jamaicans and Dominicans and Puerto Ricans. I thought it was like that everywhere.
Yeah. It was a culture shock
Virginia,
for me. When I moved to the Bronx, it was a culture shock for me.
One person.
Yeah. I was that one Black kid amongst a lot of white and some Hispanic kids. So moving to the Bronx was a severe culture shock for me. I had never seen anything like it. Ever.
Well, imagine moving to Virginia where you're in middle school where you change class. You have seven classes and you're the only one in each class.
I've been there.
It was a culture shock for me too. I was like, where did these white people come to? My neighborhood was diverse. I had no idea that.
And we don't. And it
looked like the problem. It's like, I was scared. Now I'm nervous and scared of what these people could do to me.
Right.
But they didn't do anything to me. These people were nice people.
Right.
But I learned about them and their ways and those types of things because I was exposed to it.
Yeah.
And so it's reciprocal on both sides. So for me, I've had a lot of colleagues reach out to me, see how I'm doing. And I said, we're going to continue this conversation because I ain't done. Thank you for checking on me, but I'm not done with the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know why. I have several different colleagues in customer service. Why is there only one Black male in the whole department of over 140 people? Why?
Mm-hmm.
Are you afraid to coach? To train to be over a Black male? What is it? I need to understand what this fear of Black men is. I need to understand what it is.
Yep.
And I need for someone to be honest with me and tell me the truth.
You know what? In this day and age, I don't think they can tell you the truth. Because I don't think they know. I just think it's just something that's cultivated in them to believe that they need to be afraid of a Black male. They need to be afraid of a black male, and every black woman is angry.
Yes.
That's just
and that is even hard. Worse because when you do get angry, now I have to put on this mask shield.
Right.
Smile and say, right. Good day, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Even though I'm pissed off.
Exactly. Because you have to cater to the white insecurities and their fragility. You have to cater to that.
Yeah.
You have to cater to that. They can't, if you don't cater to that, you're in trouble.
Sad, but true.
You're in trouble. And that's
why I'm moving to Aruba.
Because right, girl? We're having meetings at my job too. And today was the first day. No, yesterday I did have my camera on. I don't even want to have my camera on because if they're going to have these discussions, because I know in my heart of hearts, just in looking at, we're on a Zoom conference and you can see the disinterest in some of these people's faces. You can see it. And I'm looking at these people and I'm like, okay, this person don't give a shit. That person definitely don't give a shit. So I'm like, you know, let me turn my camera off because my face will show every emotion that I have.
Yeah. Let
me turn my camera off.
Yeah.
I'm the same. My I can hold my tongue, but my face.
My face will show. And sometimes I can't even hold my tongue, so I have to make sure that I'm muted so they can't hear all the background noise that I'm making as they speak. And it's terrible that I have to feel that way because I do feel that there are some genuine white people who understand, who want to understand.
Right.
And they're not hateful. I truly believe that.
Do you feel that it's a space that you can be honest in?
Where? At my job?
Yes. Not talking about with us.
Not at all.
No.
And what about your job, Alicia? Do you think that they...
The issue with my job, I think it's not just about race. I think it's about where I work. So I work for the state government, but I don't deal with policy. I work for the health department in finance. But the issue is, even though we work for the state, all the training materials and whatnot kind of influence you not to be political. Now that isn't saying they haven't sent out statements about what's going on. They have, but it's very like generic stuff. It's not like in-depth things. And then the other issue with my job is on my individual team, I'm the only black person and I'm the youngest. So by default, I'm the most liberal. And I don't even feel comfortable going there with my colleagues because they would never get it. And at this point, I don't care if they get it. It's not my job to show them that.
Exactly.
I feel like one coworker in particular, how do I say this? She's very, I don't know if y'all know people who are very like overly saccharine about everything, like everything is good, everything is excellent, no matter the world. We could have a fire down the hall, she'd be like, oh yeah, it's a great day. So yesterday I went into the office to do like my weekly in-office tasks, and I saw her, and she was the same, she had the same temperament as if the world is not crumbling around us. And she asked me how I was. I said okay. And of course, she said she was great. I didn't go beyond that because I already know she's not the type of person who's going to understand if I say, I'm scared that I'm going to get a phone call in the middle of the night from my mom saying one of my cousins has been shot. Mm-hmm. I'm scared that I'm going to see someone I know get arrested just for being black. She will never understand that. And again, I don't care if she does, but like Lissette's saying, if I were to be honest about how I'm feeling, I don't think I would have a job. And if I did keep my job, like Lissette also mentioned, my opinion wouldn't be valued. So I do know how to speak up about issues specific to the job, but everything outside of my job, I really don't discuss at work with most people. I have one friend that I've made at work that I can be completely honest, but she's a few years older. We have a lot in common, but everyone else, I don't care. It's just, I don't feel like doing it. And it's sad because you should feel like you can work somewhere where your voice is heard, no matter what you're talking about. But that's just not the reality we're in.
And it's not that, it's not that what you're saying is wrong. It's just that it's going to, it's coming from your heart.
Right.
It's hitting their heart. It's so much truth in it. Their insecurities, like I said, their insecurity and their fragility can't take that.
No.
Well, I will say on my job, they are listening and people are being very honest. Almost shockingly honest, in my opinion. The thing that I don't, that I am hesitant about is the actionable items. Because we could talk all day.
Absolutely.
We could talk to tomorrow. We could talk all year. What are we going to do?
Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I think that we have more allies who are asking the same questions.
Right.
But they are looking to us for the answer. And if we had the answer, would have solved this already.
Yes.
It would have been
That's
done.
The problem. They look at
they
us.
Look at me they to look solve at your problem.
Oh, exactly. We cannot solve their problem. The problem is that they have so much hate. They're so used to us being bottom feeders, because that's how they look at us, as being bottom feeders, that when you have a coworker who's sitting right next to you, even though you may have a master's degree and your white coworker has a GED, that white coworker is getting paid more than you are.
Yes.
But well, it's funny that you said that, because I had a coworker, she's a lawyer. She said, I have 3 degrees and I am a lawyer. And she said they were doing a clothing, some kind of drive. And each person was supposed to give a certain amount based on their title and their position.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she went to the young lady to give her the money. And she's like, oh, you gave me too much because this is for the lawyer pay.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I am a lawyer. She said, well, you don't look like a lawyer.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Wow.
And but that's how they, you don't look like a doctor. Is there a doctor on the plane? Yes, I'm a doctor.
What does a doctor look like?
You know, I can show you a picture of what a doctor looked like. White male, stethoscope coat. That's what they look like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
When they show pictures of doctors and kids in school, it ain't a black female with dreads in her hair.
Not
I can guarantee you that. That's not the picture that is being shown.
And then I hear a lot, and I'm sorry, I was just hungry, y'all. I hear a lot. I'm in a community. It's like a community group, a Raleigh community group. And somebody came on and they asked if anybody knew of any African-American doctors, because she was African-American. Her kids were African-American. She wanted an African-American doctor.
I saw that post.
You saw that post?
Oh, my God.
You see how they went in on her?
It didn't make any sense. I should have left the group, really, because I don't post in that group. I don't provide answers.
What happened?
They went on. Why do you need a black doctor? They're kids. There's no issue that a black doctor would understand better than a regular doctor.
And let me tell you. Let me tell you why I kind of agree with that. There's some, because sometimes white physicians don't connect with their African-American, especially if they're not culturally educated. They're not going to connect with their African-American patient.
Oh, wow. That's
they
terrible.
Went in on her wanting an African-American doctor. And as I was reading the comments, I was wondering how many of them had African-American doctors. Probably none of them.
No.
I doubt any of them have African-American doctors.
Are there any in the area?
I actually, I had one, I had, well, she was my OBGYN, but I dropped her. Not because she was black, because she gave terrible service. Just putting that out there. Just putting that out there. But yeah, I'm with Lissette. Sometimes you need a position to understand your issues. And like, I have fibroids.
To connect with.
Yeah, I have fibroids, which is something that's almost exclusive to black women. So in my situation, I was hoping a black female doctor would be more understanding, but this doctor, she's very focused on getting me on medicine. So I went over her and got a move of her. But anyway, yeah, it helps to have a doctor you can connect with.
You can connect with. Now,
reason, most of my doctors are at least female, if not black.
Now, that doesn't mean that white doctors are not capable.
Exactly.
But there are white doctors who are not culturally connected to their community. You have to consider where you are. America, this is Western medicine. Mental health, medical health is Western medicine. That's catered to white people. It's not.
Oh, it yes. Was not I would say that the treatment should be thought of. When it comes culturally,
everything
it certainly should.
It wasn't created for us. So when they look at you and they say, "Oh, you are overweight," now, yeah, I'm fat as hell. Yeah, I know that. But for you to tell me I'm 5-something and I should be 127 pounds, I would like people to see me when I turn sideways. I don't want to be invisible.
Right.
So I just
you're gonna look sick. We're gonna say what's
wrong, girl? She's wrong
with shit. She looks bad. She don't look good.
Yeah. Like I don't really agree with that. I think that.
But I think even when it comes to your health, and we've talked about this too, you have to really listen to your body.
Yes.
You know, because I'm a diabetic. That what they recommend is too low. My body can't function on that. I don't know if it's because I'm big. I don't know what that is, but I know my normal when I feel normal and when I don't. I know when I don't too. And I say, ooh, it must be high because I'm not feeling. So I stay within my body's normal. And I don't promote it to everybody else because everybody's body is different. Your normal could be 99.
Right.
Mine is not. 99, I'm ready to pass out. It just doesn't work for my body.
Absolutely.
So I think when it comes to terms of that, especially when it comes to health, we have to listen to our bodies and do what's right for your body.
Yep.
And really cater to that. But, you know, it's just been a rough week.
It's been rough. It's been a rough few months. We've been quarantined. Some people have been out of jobs.
I really feel for people.
It's been rough. Yeah, it's been rough. People don't know what to do. People don't know what to expect. People have decisions to make. Just like,
well, I'm gonna say this: if you don't vote in November,
you're a fool.
It's your fault. I want you to take the whole thing and put it on your back. And carry it around on your shoulders because it is your personal fault. I want you to feel like that because you should exercise that right regardless of what candidate you choose, because so many people have sacrificed for you to have the opportunity to do so. And all of the things that we have, I don't care if that line is 5 hours long, I'm going to be in that line.
Stand in that line like you wait
for Jordan. And I'm going to exercise my rights.
Stand, they need to stand in that line like they be standing in them lines for them Jordan sneakers.
I don't want to hear nothing.
Popeye sandwiches.
That too.
I want to see you. I don't care if it's raining, snowing. You get your butt up out there and go.
I think I'm going to try to early vote and just do it because we have early voting on Saturdays here. Just get up the Saturday when you're out going out to the store.
We have early voting here as well. So I encourage everybody, and I'm not getting into a political debate on who's the candidate and all that. You make your own decision. But you should exercise your right to be able to do so. But we don't know what will be in November. But this is scary times right now because we're still in a pandemic. People don't forget. And the numbers are increasing. They're increasing in my state as we speak because we reopened a few weeks ago.
You know what's weird? In New York, we were talking because, you know, my company is New York based. And mm-hmm. we were talking today. And ironically, it looks like the numbers in New York have decreased. I don't know how true it is because I don't know. I think these numbers are being inflated, deflated.
But it may be that the numbers have decreased because more people have gotten it already.
That's true.
If I infect the entire city, there's no one left to infect. You have already been touched.
There's no need to hold a number. Tag.
Yeah. Tag you it. You got it. Report it. And you keep moving. There's no number to report because you've already had it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Here, unfortunately, next couple of weeks bring.
It's great that there hasn't been the epicenter like New York and Seattle here in the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But every day we still have over 100 people who test positive.
Oh, yeah. I think today.
So for me, I'm not rushing, you know. I had a thing to go to tonight. My friend's like, come out and say goodbye. We have another friend moving back to New Jersey. I can't. I'm sorry. You can do what you, and I think people should. You should evaluate your own risk.
Right.
And do what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to evaluate my risk and do what I feel, which is in this house.
Yeah. Yeah.
My daughter, 17-year-old, still want to go out. Mom, when are you going to let me go back to work? Not right now, but I said, let's see how June goes.
Yeah.
And we'll see how July goes.
Oh, baby.
And we'll see how September goes. Yeah. That's how I feel, at least until they get a remedy or something to try to combat. Because I will tell everybody, and I'm going to say it on this line for anybody, do not get this COVID.
Yeah.
Because if you get it, and you have in it negatively affects you will be out for a while.
Yeah.
Now my stepfather is getting out of the hospital, but he still needs therapy.
Yeah.
And rehab. Mm-hmm. This, you're not bouncing back and back at work next week. Mm-hmm. You're going to be out for a few months. So I just encourage people, if you cannot get it, don't get it.
Listen, there's still some people in the hospital from April.
Exactly.
In ICU.
Yeah.
So it's serious.
I think it's a little strange to me how all of that has died down since the George Floyd situation. We're not even talking about it.
They're not.
But it's the same bait and switch. It'll be something else mm-hmm. next week.
It'll be something else. That's just how it goes. That's just the way it works.
But I ain't ignorant to know that it still is out there.
You still can't come to my house.
Because it's hot in Texas that it will die those numbers down. But again, you sitting in a restaurant in close contact. I mean,
yeah.
No, thank you.
No.
No, thank you.
I just can't do it. I personally am not going to take that risk. But, you know, they're graduating the kids this week. They're going to do it at the drive-in movie theater, which is nice. I'm glad that they got creative.
Okay.
Some of the counties are doing it at the racetrack because
okay.
they have the big monitor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
People can sit in their cars and the kids can walk, still do their walk and mm-hmm. all of that. I'm glad that they came up with a creative way for these students to still graduate because it's a big, they didn't know spring break was going to be it.
Right.
And they weren't going to go back and they weren't going to see their friends and stuff. So, you know, I'm just happy about that. And more to come, you know, with this situation. Take care of your mental health.
Yeah, definitely.
I have been stressed. I ain't gonna lie to anybody. I've been having headaches because I'm stressed.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm learning to, you know, lean on my faith a little bit more and take a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you said we don't have to talk tonight or we could, no, we needed to
we
have
needed
talk to kind of get it out.
Yeah, and that's why I was like, I wanted to, but I'm like, I was stressed too. My husband gets up and sometimes he's leaving out here 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, then my oldest son lives in New Jersey. So as a mother of black boys and I have a black husband. I'm always stressed. There's always something for me to worry about. So when I asked you guys, in my heart of hearts, I was like, please say y'all don't feel up to it, because I just don't want to. I don't want to. I didn't have it in me. I did not have
it. I didn't either. Not when you asked. Yeah. And that's why I said, well, we could do it later on in the week, because I thought it was important for us to talk, but just not that day. It was too raw. It was too fresh of a wound to really even touch it.
Yeah.
It is. But I feel, I read on Reddit, someone was like, self-care is a form of activism. And I agree. Taking care of yourself, that's a way you can, that's a step you can take every day to keep going. And it could be, it would be very easy to be like, well, screw everything. I just want to lay in bed all day. Mm-hmm. But the more I get up and the more I keep going, the better I feel. The more I talk with my friends, the better I feel.
Right.
But it's not easy. I'm not going to sit here and be like, every day is a picnic. It's not. There have been some things like, I just have to disconnect from the news because it can't get overwhelming. But I don't know. To keep fighting is, I think, what our ancestors wanted. I heard this great anecdote from Reggie Hudlin. I saw an interview with him yesterday, and he was talking about how he worked on the set of Django, and he was talking to one of the extras. And, you know, they actually filmed on the plantation. Mm-hmm. And the extra was like, well, I think I have my sermon for this week. And Reggie Hudlin was like, okay, what is it? He said, well, you know, our ancestors, they were slaves on this land so many years ago, and they just had the hope that one day we would be free. And that hope is what brought us to where we are now. And it just shows me that anything is possible. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that, it gave me chills. I was like, I never thought about it that way. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what I needed to hear. And I think it's something that's going to stay with me for a while.
Yeah.
And even though everything hurts, I think just having that hope is just, it's not a solution. I'm not saying that. It's just something to press forward with, at least for me.
Right. I agree.
And I mean, and we have been tenacious people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We have been to us, it wasn't a shock because we've been experiencing this.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Them, it's shocking because it's live and live in color, and you can't excuse it away. You can't justify it away.
It's alive and live in color again because it has been recorded again. It has been shown over and over again. I'm not sure why it's still coming as a shock, and I don't even know why this particular instance had this much. I'm more surprised at the outrage that came with this death than anything else, because we've seen this before.
Yeah.
So what was so different about this one that didn't happen with all the others? I mean, I'm happy that it did. I'm happy that people are now accepting it for what it is.
Right.
But I don't know what was so different about this one than any other one. Because it's not
I think time. I'm going to tell you why I think it was different. Number one, it was a visible, visceral example of the knee on his neck.
Yes.
Shooting. Oh, you get shot, pow, pow. We pow, pow, pow. Who's that, pow, pow? You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It doesn't have the same effect if I pow, pow you, right?
Right.
I'm for real pow, pow. You know what I'm just saying?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This was a, when you see Colin Kaepernick taking a knee and you put that picture side by side with this man with his knee on this man's neck, it's undeniable.
Yeah.
It's undeniable. And then still this week you have Drew Brees, who is the quarterback of the New Saints.
Girl.
He thinks that taking a knee is disrespectful. You missed the whole point. Have you been paying attention? Obviously.
No. No.
And I'm so glad that that happened, because it, the conversations that they have been having on ESPN, if you sit down and actually watch, are the conversations. You have Stephen A. Smith. You have all of these Black men who are saying what we have been feeling, and you cannot deny. You cannot deny. You can say in all of the other cases, well, you know, was a mistaken identity, or was, you know, the person with, because that's always, I was afraid, right? They, that's the cop's defense. I feared for my life, so I drew my weapon, and I did. Well, I mean, I don't know if he was afraid or not, but this was unnecessary. But this, you can't say I'm afraid of the cuffed big man with four people on his back.
Exactly.
You can't say I was afraid when you beat him up in the car, dragged him out on the floor, and put him on. What was you afraid of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That he was Superman and was going to just jump up, Superman jump on you?
What right.
You cannot use that excuse in this situation. It is 8 minutes and 46 seconds of this that you cannot deny. Rodney King, they beat the crap out of that man for I don't know how many minutes. But you know how many people was beating him and he still was moving? See, I think I've been unconscious.
Yeah.
So in their mind, well, he fighting them. You know, I'm just saying the rationality.
That one little man fighting making, all of them.
Yeah, they make in their mind. Mm-hmm. This man is not, had not resisted, because you saw the video from when they took him out and put him in the hand. There was absolutely no, you cannot defend. What is the defense that you're going to give for this one? Because it can't be that I was afraid. Afraid of who?
Yep.
It can't be. And I think the conversation, why didn't anybody do anything? My husband, why didn't anybody? I said, so they could be like the man?
Exactly. Because that's exactly, they would have got shot.
Yep.
Dead.
They would have.
Because
been
we've seen that too. Mm-hmm. People trying to intervene and get more injured than the person that they're trying to help.
Yeah.
But eventually, because we've had enough, we ain't going to care.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We can't go swimming. We can't go sitting in the house. Can't jog in the neighborhood.
Can't go to the park. Don't
let me sleep in your house.
You know what we have not touched base on? The white women that feel it's okay to just call the police.
Oh my God.
Black people living their damn lives and making up all these false accusations of they're being threatened. They're fearing for their lives.
But that goes back to the old way of nigga in your place.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I told you, and you failed to obey.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The command that I gave you, and so now I'm going to create consequences, which has not changed.
Not at all.
Since before Emmett Till.
Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And it just so happened, thank God, that there is a recording.
Exactly.
Because had there not been, who knows what would have happened to this man.
Mm-hmm.
When are you going to stop this ridiculous? I saw one, there was a video, this family was trying to take pictures of their baby in the park.
In the park,
and
yes.
With the dog.
Yes. Yes.
If that wasn't a prime example of get in your place, there's no other, and they just feel that they have
entitlement
to this power. Yes, they do.
Lord.
Yes, they do.
Lord.
And I'm not saying they all feel that way, because I don't think it's all of them.
Right.
But again, I think about that Bible verse that says, train up the child in the way they should walk and they will not depart far from it.
Yep.
That could be good or bad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So if I teach you bad,
you're
going to be bad. If I teach you, and people, I saw, they said, how do I talk to my kid about this? And they're like, well, don't talk about it. They don't want to talk about it. If I ignore the problem, it'll just go away.
Mm-hmm.
And kids are more cognizant than you know.
Yeah.
They recognize those little differences by the time they start going to preschool.
Yep.
Yes.
How does the teacher treat me versus the way they treat this person?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
I notice that there's a difference here. Yep. Now, they may not be able to articulate that, but they see it and they recognize that there is a difference.
And
why is it in our education system that they want to help hold back Black boys? They're mentally challenged or LD, they're hyperactive. We need to put them on medicine. When they're just being boys.
Never mind the fact that little Johnny done sniffed the glue literally for the fourth time this week. He's just being adventurous. But the little Black boy does something, he's going to be suspended, expelled. He got to be put in special ed. It's ridiculous.
They tried to leave my daughter back in the fourth grade. I said, absolutely not. Because what are you going to do differently than you did this year?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to do anything different. Yep. And she excelled after that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not going to allow you to do that to my child. No, absolutely not. You failed to do your job. Your job is to teach them this, not mine.
Yeah.
On the other side of that, my mom actually had to fight to get me in SAGE classes as a kid. So even though my elementary school was literally down the street from my house, it was a lot of busing, so it was a lot of white kids. And I think all of them just about got tested to be SAGE. And my mom noticed that they were getting tested and I wasn't, so she went right to the principal and she's like, look, I know my kid's smart. She needs to be tested and be put in SAGE. And I want to hold you to that. And so as a result, I was always put in SAGE classes and it ended up carrying through the rest of my school career. But if my mom didn't advocate for me, no telling what would have happened. And I think they had assumed that because I was a Black kid, my mom wasn't going to say anything because there's also that assumption, Black parents aren't involved. Well, both of my parents were quite involved. They made sure to introduce themselves to my teachers. They got to know my classmates who became my friends. And so that, on the other side of that, that's not talked about how Black kids are not encouraged to pursue the more challenging aspects of school. And as a result, I noticed a lot of kids I went to school with who were Black, they started to balk at the idea of AP classes in high school because they had this misguided belief that they weren't smart enough to do it. Whereas my mom was like, I know you're going to do the AP classes because you're going to college. And I think that's something else that needs to be addressed, the systemic ideal that just because the kid's Black that they're not good enough to go further than you think.
Let me tell you an example. My son, I think it was sixth grade? Because he's going to eighth now. So, no, it was actually in seventh grade. I had to go to his school. It was for parent teacher and I met with his teacher, it was like a panel and my son is very talkative. I know my son is talkative. I know the things that my son does. So if they say, well, Jarrett was doing this, I'm like, yeah, that sounds like him. I'm not going to be like, oh no, I'm not going to do that. If I know that my son is doing this cause he does it at home, I'm going to agree with you.
Right.
So the one teacher, one teacher told me, oh, because he's 13 now, he's tall, he's dark, he has a deep voice. One teacher was like, oh, he's such a good student, but when he laughs because his voice is so deep, it travels, it startles me. So now I'm looking at her like, so my son can't laugh? Like, so, you know, that was one flag. Then another teacher said, oh, he's so social. And this is the one that really got me. He's so social. He could be a shoe salesman.
Oh, and, my
husband had to grab my hand. My head nearly did like the Exorcist twist. Like, what do you mean he could be a shoe salesman? I was like, you mean he can own shoe stores? Because what do you mean he can be a shoe salesman? That's as high as you see him going. Don't give him these limitations.
Right.
He can be much more than a shoe salesman. Shoe salesmen aren't the only social professionals. So why are you got my child selling shoes? My baby can't laugh because you get threatened.
I had a supervisor email me one time because I blew my nose. She said, what? You're too loud. I said, excuse me, am I supposed to let the snot run down my face? I need to blow my nose. I'm going to blow my nose. I mean, it's just absurd, the things that people just...
These little microaggressions that present, and it's outrageous. And then they want us to just sit back and accept all of the things that they throw at us. And for the most part, we do. I can't even say that we don't. We have been very forgiving for people. When people say how horrible Black people are, Black people are so violent, Black people are the most forgiving people, except to ourselves, but that's also learned behavior. We forgive every freaking
look at the brother of the man who got shot by the police.
I'm gonna tell y'all right now on this podcast, please know, if anything ever happens to me or any of my family members in this nature, I don't forgive none of the motherfuckers. I don't care what a report says. Please know, I do not forgive you. I don't forgive you. I will
forgive
not.
Forgive them of that. Just go on and forgive them.
No, I'm just, no, I will not. We are very, Black people are very forgiving. We have to do.
And that's why I don't understand where this fear is. I don't get it. What are you afraid that we are going to do?
We should be fearful of ourselves, because we're forgiving to everyone except ourselves.
Yeah. That's learned behavior.
We were taught that. We were heard
and it is demonstrated by our skin tone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. They'll treat someone like me. Oh, well, Terry, love you so much. You're just so great. But that dark skinned sister over there,
she's angry.
We don't even talk to her. We don't even care nothing about her over there.
She an angry one. She's mean. Oh, she don't smile. No, damn it. What do I got to smile for? What does my smile do for you? My smile eases your internal fears. No, you smile for me. I got more reason to be scared of you than you do of me.
Exactly.
But I think deep down they know that, and that's where the fear is coming from.
That it's like deep I said, people like, and ever. That goes back to what I said before. if we were to speak from our heart, it would hit their heart, and that's not something that they can handle. That is their insecurities and their fragility, and they're not ready to deal with that. And that's not all white people, but one is too many.
It is.
One is too many. Even if it was just one white person, that's too many.
It'd be something like it if this was a recent occurrence, but this has happened since
hundreds of years.
400 years.
Hundreds.
In 1619. If you're not ready to hear the truth, then you never will be.
Yes, this is hundreds of years. This is hundreds of years of us being strange fruit.
A lot of conversations to break down some of those barriers, but I think they can be done. And I don't know when it will change, but we got to start somewhere.
Right.
That's just my, I can't go back to yesterday. I can't change anything that happened yesterday. I can only focus on today. What are we going to do today?
Yeah.
What are we going to do? What plan are we going to put into place? What things are we going to do? I think we need to start having discussions again about our own community internally with ourselves.
We do.
What are we going to do?
We definitely do.
Our Black boys and men.
But it's hard to focus on. So the struggle of Black people is that we have to manage ourselves. We got to, from the point of a Black woman, I got to manage myself. I got to manage my children. My husband and I work together. We manage each other. But then we got to manage these white people's feelings. We got to deal with how, what they might feel like. It's a whole nother world. So we're managing ourselves and we're managing them. Yes, we need to get the Black community together. All Black people need to get it together, but all Black people are dealing with the Black community and the white community. We can't deal with it all.
Right.
We can't. So
no, we can't. But what we need to start doing, put our money where our mouth is.
Definitely.
And stop supporting these businesses definitely that do not have our interests in heart. Definitely. Because there's a lot of power in the Black dollar.
And they know this.
And they know that. And they manipulate it. And I think we need to start thinking about that. Another thing that we need to start thinking about as a community as a whole is classes for our young Black men at every age,
at every stage,
elementary, middle school, high school, and beyond.
I agree.
What support are we giving them for them to be, like Alicia, you said your parents were your advocates. Where are the advocates for these young Black males to tell them, dude, you could be President of the United States if you want to.
I agree.
You can be whatever. What is it that they're good at?
Right.
Besides basketball, football, and entertaining.
That's gonna calls for a whole overhaul of the entire environment, because it doesn't matter
how many. But we have to start somewhere.
You have to start somewhere, but it doesn't matter how many times you tell these little Black boys what they can do. When they go home and they wake up in the morning and they're looking at the same, there's not a lot of activities for them that's going to cater to their greatness. It's
we
like
have it, to change.
It,
that
it has to change. It's a complete overhaul,
and it can't be one person. It can't be a Steve Harvey camp in the summertime.
Absolutely.
It really has to be a comprehensive, all hands on deck.
Absolutely.
Thursday is your day for mentoring and teaching at 7 o'clock, just like we have in these podcasts and these calls. It has to be that simple, basic, and committed to what are you going to do.
I love it.
Fit
absolutely
in these things.
Yep.
And I think it needs to be. Now, it can't just come from me, because who's Natera? You know what I'm saying? We got to have more organization to be able to do it. And I told my family last week, I'm ready to call upon my sorority and my fraternity sisters. Where are y'all?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the conference? Because I'm ready to go. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
To heal ourselves first.
Yes.
Then we can deal with the outside stuff.
Yes.
But we have to get better with, and I'm not placing the blame on us, because it's not our fault.
Right.
No.
In any stage of the situation. But the only way to make change is to change.
The change, yep. You got to start.
If we just keep talking about it, and it's just talk.
You got to start and not give up when it gets hard, because it's going to be hard. We're talking about hundreds of years of the same thing. It's not going to change in a year or 2 years or 3 years. It's going to take some time, but you need to make sure that you have a team in place that is willing to put in that work.
Right.
I think that we have enough people who would be willing to do it, but it has to be organized in a way that it's effective.
Right.
And that is where it takes coordination. And I think they did it in NAACP and all these great organizations that we had in the past. We need to go back to that model. And we need to invest in those models that worked in the past to say we need new leadership, we need new voices, we need new activism, we need we need new programs, we need, and because we are now in a virtual society, it should be easier. I could connect with anybody, anywhere. We don't live in the same state. We don't live in the same town or anything.
Yeah.
What can we do? You know, I mentored a group of young women. I want to get back to doing that to help them navigate in this environment.
Yes.
Because it is difficult.
Yeah, very, very.
I want to get back to high schoolers. What is your plan? You know how many high schools I've talked to, they want to drop out? I said, no, this, baby, you can't drop out. This is teaching you tenacity. Mm-hmm. This is what high school is about. I don't care if you learn, if you know why X plus 3 equals 10. I don't care if you know what X is. I don't care. You are supposed to try to learn why what X is. That's your duty. Because there's going to be some things in life that you got to figure out.
Yep.
And that's what I told the young lady. I said, and that's why you can't drop out. I don't really care if you know what X is, but X is going to help you with the X's in your life, the situations in your life that you have to figure out. And you might as well learn it now while you're young, instead of when you're too old and have regrets that you didn't figure this thing out earlier.
Yes, yes. Yes, I agree.
So that's my, you know, my, I don't care if you're getting A's, straight A's or not. I just, this is, high school is tenacity for those who don't have that accelerated thought process. This is teaching you how to survive in an environment that's difficult.
Yep.
Because when you leave here, guess what? It ain't going to get no easier.
Nope, it just gets harder. It gets harder.
And we lost that as a community once we got desegregated, because we were all would have been segregated to a certain part, and your grandmothers and your aunties and your neighbors and whoever, you know, we call everybody auntie so-and-so, taught you that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You keep your head up. You don't, you hold your head high. You don't let nobody walk all over you. We were taught as we need to go back to those things. And go back into these children and teach the next generation the same exact thing, so that when there's another situation like George Floyd, and I hope there's not, but I can't say for certain, I'm not too optimistic that it isn't going to be, that we know what we can and cannot do, and what we should and shouldn't do.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot. We unpacked a lot today. It feels good to get it off of my chest. I don't know about you. It doesn't solve much, but maybe I'll be able to sleep good tonight, because last night, I mean, I went to bed early. I was exhausted, because the night before that, it was like impossible to sleep. But maybe tonight I won't have the weird dreams.
Right.
I hope you don't. I hope you get some good sleep. I haven't been sleeping as well as I normally do either. But I go to sleep, but it ain't a restful, peaceful, you know, where you feel, where you wake up, feel rejuvenated type of
day. I wake up feeling like I've been up.
Did I even go to sleep?
Yeah, up all night.
Did I even go to sleep? I'm still tired. I don't want to, I want to really take this time this weekend to really just decompress.
Right.
And then, you know, go back at this thing on Monday. Because on Monday. The thing about it is you can't give up. I mean, you can, but that doesn't help.
No.
I want to be a part of the solution, not the problem.
It just keeps us at square one. And that's why we keep replaying this whole thing over and over and over again.
Well, lady.
It's been real. This was a great one.
Between a talk and a hard place, honey. For real.
And we had, that's where we are right now, between a talk and a hard place.
Yes.